Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Here we go. It is hour two. We are live in Los Angeles. This is The Herd, wherever you may be, however you may be listening. Fox Sports Radio, iHeartRadio, FS1. I am back after a little health scare. I'm fine. Pain for about 24 hours. After that, all good. Just trying to get my energy back. I will say this, and this is often repeated. This is not a revelation of any kind, but I got to tell you something. About once every 18 months, I bonk my head on something or hurt my ribs or do something stupid, and I end up in, you know, some hospital or something. And just been, this has been happening my whole life, by the way. You work hard, you play hard, you end up in a hospital. American healthcare workers are unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. I'm not sure there's a standard in America, at least I'm not aware of it, in any industry where the floor is that high. Everybody's great. Everybody's great. Everybody's caring. They're on it. They ask questions. I'm just sitting there annoying, just pushing buttons, trying to get more hot coffee and stay up for the Super Bowl, and just people flying in and flying out and giving me painkillers and all that stuff. I'm not saying I want to hang out there regularly, but about every 18 months I end up in a hospital and I'm blown away by the quality of the care. You got to be built the right way to be in a hospital, and you got to care about things way beyond yourself. People do. So tip of the cap to men and women, young and old, that work in hospitals, from specialists, nurses, emergency room techs. You're unbelievable. Joy Taylor is joining me today. I am back for the first time. Now, Joy, you don't end up in a hospital often as I do, but I've bonked my head in the last year. I had that goofy injury, and then there was a couple weeks ago this thing I dealt with. And then I ended up there a couple times playing softball. And I am always one clumsy step away from ending up in a blue robe. But I will say this, I'm back. I feel great. And how are you?
I'm great. By the grace of God, I haven't been in the hospital much other than for surgery, which was a long time ago. But yeah, I completely forgot about your head. That was a whole different situation, obviously. We gotta get you in a bubble.
Boy, sportscaster in a bubble is something I need. Okay, Colin Wright, Colin Wrong, brought to you by Jersey Mike's Subs. Be a sub above. Jersey Mike's app is short for appetizing. Save 25% in your order with the code JMikes25, JMikes25, through the 18th only. Jersey Mike's, be a sub above. By the way, they delivered last week to my home. Free lunch on Wednesday. How great is that? Here we go. Colin Wright, Colin Wrong.
Where Colin was right?
Well, when J.J. Watt a couple of weeks ago said he didn't know about his future in Houston, I said he's a perfect Packer. And the story this morning, second best Las Vegas odds, the Green Bay Packers to land J.J. Watt. He's from Wisconsin. He's got his money. He's a first ballot lock Hall of Famer. Question is, J.J., do you want to win games? This is where you should go. He's got a Packer personality. It's a perfect fit. The Packers only really pay big boy money to Aaron Rodgers and David Bakhtiari. And from what I read this morning, they are restructuring or have restructured Bakhtiari's contract. So there's a place to get him in. We felt this was the landing spot. And what do you know, a week later, that's the reports.
Where Colin was wrong.
Bruce Arians won a Super Bowl, and I said I thought he had a very so-so regular season with Brady. I thought they stuck to that pass-over-the-top offense too long, and I also said I felt in the playoffs he was the coach on the hot seat. It was just a year in which I didn't feel he had it all buttoned up, but I'll give him a lot of credit. In four total playoff games, they averaged only four penalties a game. And some of the biggest mistakes, like Brady interceptions at Lambeau, are things he could not control. I thought they outcoached Kansas City in the Super Bowl. I thought it was a win not just for personnel in the front office and Brady, but a win for coaching, and Bruce Arians deserves that credit.
where Colin was right.
Josh Allen finished ahead of Patrick Mahomes a week ago in MVP votes. Now, he didn't win it, but I was on this all year. If you go to the last five games of the regular season, a third of the season, the last 5 weeks, Josh Allen wasn't just sort of better than Patrick Mahomes. It wasn't close. He had 15 TDs, two picks, 70% completion percentage, and 117.5 passer rating. He was a dominant quarterback over the last 5 weeks of the regular season, and Mahomes, frankly, struggled down the stretch often.
Where Colin was wrong.
I never thought Russell Wilson would be one of the most outspoken quarterbacks in the league, but last week when I was off, he did intimate to Dan Patrick he would like to have some personnel say. He was outspoken. It was not status quo. For the record, I was critical of Andrew Luck too often taking the company road. I do think it's important from time to time for the star quarterback to say, hey, let's go get this guy. And as Albert Breer just pointed out in the Super Bowl, it was all those Brady guys scoring the touchdown. So it surprised me. I'm glad to be wrong. I think Russell Wilson has earned the right to a strong voice.
Where Colin was right.
We're going to take one final credit for Tom Brady. There were a lot of people that thought he was a shot fighter. A lot of people thought he would struggle. We made two big predictions. We said New England is going to be a non-factor and irrelevant. They were sub 500. And we said Brady's going to get to the playoffs and win a playoff game one minimum. And he did. And I didn't think they'd win the Super Bowl. But there were a lot of critics on Brady. And I always went back to the same thing. When I watched him throw the football, I still think he has a top 7-8 arm in the NFL. In fact, I think he has one of the better bad weather arms. It's his torque. It's his hips. But, listen, there are things with age. He clearly doesn't want to get hit as much. He throws more balls up for grabs. He needs to be on platform. He needs better protection now than he probably needed 7 or 8 years ago. But I never bought into a shot fighter. I still think he throws a beautiful, accurate football, sometimes, in fact, with too much zip.
Where Colin was wrong.
LaMelo Ball is not only surviving, he's the best rookie so far by a mile. Since Charlotte named him a starter, he's averaging 21 a game. And they're actually right now would be a playoff team. When I saw him, I thought his game was a lot of flash and not a ton of substance. But I will say this, of the Ball brothers, he can actually shoot. He brings much needed energy and juice to the franchise. And listen, he's averaging over 20 a game as a starter. He plays with a ton of confidence. He's obviously great off the dribble. He's a great ball handler and passer. But I was wrong.
Where Colin was right.
Justin Herbert won Rookie of the Year. I didn't get all the critics. I understood people who thought, you know, at Oregon, you know, he can be a little mechanical. But after he won the Rose Bowl and was easily the best player on the field against an excellent Wisconsin defense, I said, folks, what are we doubting? He's big, strong, four-point student, smart and mobile with a huge arm. I don't get all the critics. I don't get it. Plus, I had two people at the Senior Bowl tell me he was head and shoulders better than anybody else on the field. He set a rookie touchdown pass record, and he finished the season strongly. And this is one of the things I like about him. You know, one of the criticisms of Lamar Jackson is he's kind of fresh and new and you haven't defended him, but you can figure Lamar out. Fair or not, that's a criticism. You can kind of figure him out. Justin Herbert got better with a coach that got fired. He was 4-0 down the stretch, 8 touchdowns, 1 pick. Every week he got better, finished stronger than he started.
Where Colin was wrong.
New rule, I hate backward hats, but apparently now you're allowed to wear one if you win your 7th Lombardi trophy. Listen, I think it's the worst look for a professional athlete. It really looks like a frat boy, but Brady wore it. Now, in fairness, Brady was a couple of beers in and appeared to be drunk, so his judgment was completely lapsed. This was not a great moment of judgment and clarity for Tom Brady. But new rule, if you win a 7th Lombardi trophy, I'm not going to call you out.
Where Colin was right.
You know who suddenly is red hot in the NBA? Let me think. Oh, the team Chris Paul is on. The Suns have won 6 straight, 9 of 10, and it's the same team as last year that was mostly lousy before the bubble. It's Chris Paul and a bunch of kids. He is the most underrated point guard ever, He's the most underrated NBA player in a decade. He's the anti-Westbrook. He wins everywhere. He's got no flash. There's no sizzle. His best friend isn't the basketball. He actually communicates at a level that's about as high as NBA stars do. He holds people accountable, but for some reason, because he shoots too many mid-range jumper and he's not flashy, there's something about Chris Paul that just people can't get their arms around. We like our point guards to be magic and flashy, but he and John Stockton win games, make everybody better, and it's amazing. Remember, Oklahoma City was tanking. He got them to the playoffs. Phoenix has been lousy for 8 years with all these same guys. Now suddenly they've won 9 of 10 in the West. Chris Paul, I don't care if you buy his shoes or not, this guy is what point guard should be. Tough, verbal, intense, elevates others, and shoots a great mid-range jumper.
Where Colin was right.
Been saying this now for 3 years. Trevor Bauer chose the Dodgers over a New York team. Matt Stafford said, give me Los Angeles over the Patriots. Something is happening in sports over the last 3 years where players are choosing this high-taxed maven, this high-taxed zip code, Los Angeles County, and they're choosing it over winning franchise and other big cities. Trevor Bauer could have chosen a lot of teams, and he chose the Dodgers, a stacked pitching staff, where he'll be good, but they've also got Walker Buehler, Clayton Kershaw, David Price. They've already got arms everywhere. They've got stars everywhere. Matt Stafford, I'll take the Rams. Multiple teams were offered. So there is a migration to Los Angeles right now. We know that sports and entertainment have converged. I think a lot of this goes back to people saw LeBron James move to Los Angeles and get movie deals and TV deals and production setups, and other athletes think, hey, I can pay more in taxes, but I'll make 4 times the money eventually because I can build things here post-retirement. I think there's a LeBron effect here. LeBron has set up so many ancillary businesses, it's highly attractive to high-profile star athletes. Trevor Bauer is a Dodger. That team, look, the Dodgers right now pitching staff is an all-star pitching staff. Forget their lineup. It doesn't have a chance to be the best baseball team in 10, 15 years. All right. Trent Dilfer's around the corner. Rick Bucher, some NBA stuff as well. Jordan Palmer last hour. It is good to be back.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
By the way, it's very interesting. Stories today that Chicago leads the Colts in pursuit for Carson Wentz. And it's very interesting because Chicago's in a division with a big brother, Green Bay. And because of that, it always feels like the Bears are chasing the Packers. And I think that puts some institutional pressure on the Bears front office. The Colts, by the way, have often been the big brother in their division. So it doesn't feel like they're chasing anybody. And I think they'll be more measured and patient in terms of what they would give up for Carson Wentz. So the Bears are in a weird situation. They got a GM and a head coach on the hot seat. The GM, Ryan Pace, what does he care about draft picks? So it's like Bill O'Brien's last couple of years in Houston. What did he care about draft picks? He had to win games or he was going to get fired. He got fired anyway. So in Chicago, I see an organization that would go for it regardless of what they would have to give up for Carson Wentz because they want to win games. Trubisky's a free agent. He's not coming back. Nick Foles isn't much of a cap hit. They're going to be in go for it phase to keep their 7-figure jobs. The Colts are different. The Colts feel like, hey, Sam Darnold, we got Jonathan Taylor, we got the best offensive line. There's no alpha in our division we're chasing. My guess is Chicago gets it based on some of the things that aren't just football things. They're the reality of chasing a big brother in a division. And the Bears always feel like they're chasing the Green Bay Packers. And with that, Trent Dilfer, decade and a half in the NFL, within 6 playoff games in his life, 5-1 in those playoff games. You know, it is interesting because when you were in Tampa, Tampa was, I covered it. It was kind of a mess as an organization. And sometimes when an organization doesn't have great history or people's jobs are on the line, they're much more willing to go for it. And where the Packers or the Colts, as you know, Trent, they've had success. It can drive you nuts as a player, but they're not chasing anything, right? So I kind of feel like Chicago's going to go all in on this thing. Do you think Carson Wentz is worth two first-round picks and spending that? Do you think he is?
I don't. I agree with you 100%. The psychology of this situation, in fact, all this quarterback carousel is fascinating. I think you're right. I think Chicago has to panic. They have to knee-jerk react to this. And they will probably offer more than they need to get Carson Wentz, where you nailed it perfectly with Indy. There's some other good quarterbacks out there that they probably feel just as good about. You mentioned Sam Darnold. When you have the infrastructure that the Colts have, the offensive line, the runner, the skill position guys, the offensive staff, you're not going to panic. You're not going to make a knee-jerk reaction and give up too much for a player that does have a high ceiling. I'm with you. I think the Bears have to. They're the little brother in the division. They have to make this type of splash hire for two reasons. One, they got to be relevant again, and you said it. They got to save their jobs, and draft picks for Ryan Pace aren't as important because he knows he's got to win right now or he's out the door.
You know, I said this about J.J. Watt. I do believe symbolism matters and momentum matters. And it's the old crowded bar theory. Nobody wants to walk down the street in New York with your wife and go into a bar where there's nobody in it, right? You want some juice. You want some energy. You want fun, right? You want to be part of the Cheers bar. Everybody's got a good joke. And so I look at Green Bay and I think they could use a little momentum. Tampa feels right, like right now. Oh, my God, I'd take a pay cut and go play in Tampa. I got no state tax. The weather's good. Brady's rolling. Look how good Fournette did. I don't like people reacting to other teams, but I do feel like, Trent, Green Bay needs to create a little inertia here, right?
I hate agreeing with you on everything you bring up, but I'm on board with you here as well. I think Green Bay has to overspend, make a splash free agent acquisition. I think with all the stuff that came out at the end of the season with Aaron being disgruntled with certain things, I think you need to add momentum. You need to be part of the offseason conversation. You're not going to be part of this offseason conversation as it relates to quarterbacks, and that's going to dominate now to the draft and post-draft. So interject yourself in the conversation with a J.J. Watt signing, with another splash free agent signing. Go outside your comfort zone. The Packers haven't done this typically. Why can't you do it now? I don't think you're this close from getting to a Super Bowl. You know you got to beat Tampa. You're going to need some difference makers, and I think J.J. Watt can be that difference maker.
Were you surprised last week that Mr. Go Hawks, Russell Wilson, was actually outspoken on personnel, offensive line? It's not his personality type. I can theorize why he did it, but were you surprised, Trent, he did it?
I was, because he has such a great relationship with the organization, and you kind of don't air your dirty laundry out to the public after the season. He must be really, really upset, and I think he's justified to be upset. I was surprised that he went public with it. Think about if you're Russ. You know, he went from cooking, and the first 4 or 5 weeks of the season, he's the clear favorite for MVP. He's putting up numbers that are, you know, making our jaw drop. Defense is struggling, and then all of a sudden they kind of transition back to bully ball, try to get the defense to play better. All of a sudden he goes from cooking to being put in the freezer drawer, turn around, hand the ball off on first and second down all the time, having to play on third down without a great offensive line. He's watching what's going on around the league. When Tom Brady has more weapons at his disposal, he knows what to do with a great young offensive line. And you got to be sitting there going, wait a second, why isn't my team doing this for me? So I can understand why Russell's upset. Now, I love Pete's formula. I don't think he's wrong for doing this, but the quarterback isn't going to be the lead dog all the time. And that happened. We saw that happen midseason where they made a definitive shift from being quarterback-driven, offensive-driven, to going back to being defensive-driven and run the ball more and really take the ball out of Russell's hand.
It's interesting. I was talking to a friend the other day, and he said, listen, he goes, you media guys are getting all fired up on Matt Stafford. He says, but he's not an overly mobile quarterback. He is a pocket guy. That's what Goff was. He's been banged up. Forget about the insinuation was, we've always sort of understood until Brady, it takes 2 years. You get into a system, you get comfortable in a system, it becomes rote, you don't have to think about it. This idea that Matt Stafford solves a dilemma, my friend pushed back and said, well, show me the wins. Like, why are you guys all into this? So what's your takeaway on that?
Yeah, I think it's both. I think both things are happening. One, we just saw a unicorn, right? We just saw a total aberration in Tom Brady going year one with no OTAs, with no summer football, with a bunch of new people, take them to a championship. That's not going to happen with anybody else. However, I do think Stafford brings an element that your friend isn't recognizing, and that's his ability to play in conflict. Jared really struggled in conflict. When it wasn't right, when it wasn't on rhythm, when the pocket wasn't right, he struggled. Stafford's made a career out of putting up big numbers under conflict. And you don't have to be mobile. You just have to be comfortable in conflict. And I bet you that is what McVay and the rest of the personnel department saw with Stafford, is the upgrade there is they don't have to be right all the time, and Stafford can make them right. I love Jared Goff. I think he's going to do really well over time in Detroit. But I do think if you're the Rams and you're trying to get in this mix right now, right, you're looking at Green Bay, you're looking at Tampa, and you're saying those are the teams, then I do think Matthew Stafford gives you a little edge in trying to compete with those two teams because of how he deals with conflict.
So the Super Bowl's done. It's in the books. I was surprised. I didn't think they'd win at Lambeau. I thought it was a win for coaching. I want to talk specifically about the offensive line because I said – when you look at, as you well know, from the days you were there, Tampa special teams have been a wreck and they've never had a great O-line. This offensive line was kind of a bunch of guys. Jensen's a good center. Wirfs was a rookie. It was just guys. It was like when a year ago, 8 months ago, we were like, God, is the offensive line good enough for Tom? And then I watch them in the playoffs and I'm like, oh my God, it feels like a dominating unit. What does Brady do either pre-snap, situationally, what did he do to elevate this unit? Because I thought their last three games, they were a dominant offensive line, and they were not in September, and they were not last year.
I think there's a couple elements to it. Number one, anybody that devalues the X's and O's in the NFL doesn't know what they're talking about. Yes, Willies and Joes are important, but X's and O's going along with those Willies and Joes is what makes them reach their potential. And I think there was a definitive change for the Bucs with what they did up front. They went from trying to do everything to only a few things really well. Started with the run game. They really simplified their run game. They ran a lot of inside zone, a lot of duo, and then versions off of that. So the offensive line got to do the same things over and over and over. And then they added a really, really robust play action pass game off of those base runs to keep the protection assignment simple. And then the pass game, you asked me what Brady does, he makes subtle little changes to make sure they have help. So when you call a pass protection, and so you say we're sliding left. Well, you can slide left or you can slide semi-left and give your guard center a little more help if you know the edge defender isn't coming. So how he manipulates the protections at the line of scrimmage so that they have help. They also added some tight ends and backs inserting on their way out for some help, thumps and chips and things like that to help out the tackles and inside players. So there was a definite plan from the coaching staff and Tom Brady to make sure that the offensive line was going to go from struggling to thriving late in the year. And they did it through X's and O's, simplifying some things and all getting on the same page. And it's really the way great offensive lines roll. When great offensive lines get on the same page, you maximize each player on that offensive line. They start playing better together because they're practicing the same stuff day in and day out. Now by midseason, end of season, you're rolling and they're thinking each other's thoughts. And you talk to any great offensive line, when they start thinking each other's thoughts, they have their own little offensive line language when they start, you know, speaking their offensive line language to one another and reading each other's minds. They become a great unit, and that's what happened with the Bucs.
Good stuff, Trent Dilfer. You know, the next 6 weeks for us are slower in terms of sports. The NFL ends. We got about 6 weeks before free agency. And, you know, it's funny, Trent. I wrap a bow on the NFL season because I didn't talk last week. And I look at it, and it's always been a copycat league. But I do like the increased power of the quarterbacks, voicing their opinions, the ability to move from franchise to franchise. You didn't grow up in this. I hate the franchise tag. I think it's awful for quarterbacks to get trapped. And I got to tell you, I look at this year, the year of quarterback empowerment. That's how I kind of see it, that, you know what? They get a voice. They get an opinion. Maybe it was Tommy led, but that's kind of, when I look at the season, that kind of sticks to me. Is there anything, Rapoport, at you that sticks out to you this year?
I'm shocked the quality of football without the offseason programs, and I'll parlay what you just said right there. I don't think you have to be done talking about the NFL. Park Avenue is still going to win up until the draft because all we're going to be doing is talking about quarterbacks. You'd rather talk about quarterbacks than the NBA or hockey. I'm pretty confident of that. You have Watson, you got Darnold, you got Carr, you have Wilson now. Then you have four guys in college football that are going to be really good pros, and Lawrence, Fields, Wilson, and Lance. So we're going to be talking quarterbacks ad nauseum here for the next 6 weeks. It's not going away, and everybody's going to listen because everybody wants to know about the quarterback. And I agree with you. They're more empowered now than they've ever been.
Yeah, good stuff, Trent. Good seeing you. We'll talk soon.
See you, brother.
Lipscomb Academy head football coach in Nashville, Tennessee. Here is Joy Taylor with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Well, Matthew Stafford reportedly told the Lions he did not want to be traded to the Patriots before he got dealt to the Rams. Stafford wouldn't confirm or deny that he names New England specifically, but he did clarify that he wanted to be moved to a team that had a chance to win a Super Bowl, which is obviously not New England this season. He said, I asked to go to a team that was ready to win a championship, and there were a few teams on that list. There were a few teams that were not on that list, and the Lions were respectful of that and understood completely. I had thoughts and reasons for each one of them.
But he did say
so
New England.
It's a little vague, but obviously, yeah, we know New England is not on that list. Which, look, that's not a shot at New England. We all know what the state of New England is. I think the only people that didn't know the state that New England was in was Patriots fans before this season started.
Yeah.
I think now we're all on the same page. Now, I still maintain that Bill Belichick has to have some sort of dramatic plan that we don't know about.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to turn it around this year, but I don't think that Bill Belichick is just going to ride off into the sunset with the situation that he has now. That said, Matthew Stafford, to Trent's point, is an upgrade over Jared Goff with the Rams because of the fact that he has had to play in Detroit where he's had to be on the run and make fast decisions and play in conflict, like Trent said. I do think that that is the difference. We talk all the time about what Jared Goff can do when he's comfortable. I would prefer to have a quarterback who can do things when you're uncomfortable because at some point or another, you're going to be uncomfortable. Even the greatest teams have injuries and meltdowns. Look what happened to Kansas City in the Super Bowl. Now, obviously, Kansas City was a great team, and you know we've talked about what has happened in the Super Bowl, but Patrick Mahomes can obviously do anything. I mean, he's flying sideways and throwing the ball and smacking receivers in the head under conflict. But Matthew Stafford is an upgrade for the Rams. I love how the Rams do business. I love that they're aggressive.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's enough. I still think they need a few more pieces, but I still trust Sean McVay, and I think that you never know what's going to happen in the season. There's always huge injuries. There's always things that happen that we don't predict. So I think that the Rams are in a great position now.
Well, I think that they're more interesting, certainly. I feel like we've plateaued on the interesting part.
Well, you and I hadn't gotten really a chance to talk about what happened in the Super Bowl. Tom Brady's only a week removed from winning his seventh title, and he's already looking towards next season. The TB12 sports account tweeted a picture of Brady preparing to work out with his trainer, Alex Guerrero, with the comment, "Back to work, #EyesOn8. We played the clip from Scotty Miller talking to Nick Wright last week about the work ethic that Tom Brady has. I mean, obviously, Tom Brady is an outlier, but I think what I took away from that Super Bowl really is that he brings, and you mentioned this earlier, he just brings an element of excellence wherever he goes. LeBron has proven that he can do this as well. It elevates everyone. Now, the story of the Super Bowl, really, to me, it's not as sexy, but the defense, the Tampa Bay Bucks defense was the story of
totally
the Super Bowl.
Totally shut down. I mean, literally totally discombobulated. If I'd have told you Mahomes won't throw for a touchdown. I mean, Kansas City was completely... By the way, we did say this, Joy, in fairness to you and I. We said we both like Kansas City. I like Kansas City, but I did say you will be able to tell two or three series in if they can't block Tampa's defensive front, it's going to look a lot like that Giants upset of the Patriots And I remember that 2007 Super Bowl, 2007, 2008. You were 2-3 series in, and you're like, they can't block Strahan. They can't. Who was Justin Tuck and Strahan? They couldn't block them. And you're like, if you can't block somebody in the second series, it generally doesn't get easier in the 8th and 12th series. So as the game was going on and I'm sitting there in my hospital bed, I'm like, oh, that's a problem. This is a non-correctable personnel issue. Tampa's defensive front are better players because of injuries than the KC offensive front. So the game started looking like, as it, the longer it went, the uglier it got, mismatches in the trenches.
And just because it went that way didn't mean I lost any faith in Kansas City. I don't really feel like I like let go until like the third quarter. I'm like, all right, like they're clearly not going to be able to adjust or do anything with what Tampa Bay is doing. Like it's just excellence we're watching right now. But we've seen Kansas City come back from so much before. The only difference was it wasn't Tom Brady and Todd Bowles' defense on the other side. So LaMelo Ball has been playing really well this season, and he's the favorite to win Rookie of the Year. He's such a draw that the NBA is looking to get him involved in the All-Star festivities. The league reportedly hopes he'll participate in the skills competition this year. He leads all rookies in points, rebounds, assists, and steals per game. He's third amongst all rookies in minutes per game. And I would like to see this as well. The All-Star game is set for March 7th in Atlanta. The league is reportedly looking into holding the three-point contest and the skills competition during the game and the slam dunk competition at halftime. During the pregame and the slam dunk competition at halftime. So limiting, you know, the days and everything that normally goes on at the All-Star weekend. Obviously, we're still in a pandemic, so they're making it all work. But I love LaMelo coming into the draft. I love that he had international experience. I've seen him play from a very young age. I just felt like he was going to have a bigger, stronger NBA body, having played against grown men for those couple of years when he was overseas playing. I know everyone was very skeptical because of how things have gone with Lonzo, but I mean, obviously I'm impressed, but I can't say I'm terribly surprised. I really liked LaMelo coming into this draft.
Well, both Ball brothers have long, angular frames. They're both very good rebounders, and they can be good team defenders. So the difference is this kid can shoot. I mean, listen, the NBA is a shooter's league, and LaMelo can shoot. And Lonzo struggles with it. So, like Ben Simmons. I love Ben Simmons, but he can't shoot. And it'll always be an issue. And if you can shoot in this league, it's almost like there are certain things in sports everybody wants, like a pass rusher in football. Nobody is saying, we got that. Everybody would take one. If you go to any NBA team, including the Lakers, and say, hey, we got this kid, he can really shoot threes. Everybody wants it. You cannot have enough three-point shooters. This kid walks in, he can hit jumpers. He's a very confident shooter. Boom. He averages 21 a game as a starter. Good stuff. Joy with
the
news.
And he's such an excellent... Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's okay. Are we done, by the way? I think we are.
Yeah, we are.
Well, Joy, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
I want to continue that on. Rick Bucher is around the corner. Anthony Davis. This was the baton year. Handed off to Anthony Davis. Once again, he's missed 5 games. He's hurt again. And LeBron leads the West in minutes. It never changes. Rick Bucher next.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Rick Bucher's a senior writer, podcast Bucher and Friends, covering the NBA for about 30 years, Fox Sports NBA analyst. We got about 7 minutes with him. I haven't talked to Bucher in a while, and Rick Bucher is now joining us live. All right, so I thought this was the year. This was the pass the baton from LeBron to AD. He was great in the finals. And then all of a sudden, he's hurt again. He's missed 5 games. LeBron leads the West in minutes. And I'm like, this is kind of LeBron's career. Just about the time he wants to pass the baton a little, it gets passed right back to him. What is your takeaway on AD's injury? Do you think there's frustration inside LeBron's camp or the Lakers' camp?
Yeah, I wouldn't say that there's frustration there. And by the way, never have I been so happy to see someone on TV and working as I am to see you, Colin. Your fill-in hosts are smart enough to have me on a regular basis, actually more than you do, but nonetheless, I'm very happy, overjoyed, actually, to see you back. AD, as far as the impact on LeBron, I actually think that this is an opportunity for LeBron when it comes to his MVP chances. One of the biggest reasons he wasn't MVP last year, it's because everybody looked at Giannis and said, well, he doesn't really have that number two. There's people who thought that AD was actually the number one with the Lakers. And it points up, though, how lucky they were that they had the shutdown for 3 months and then had a sprint to the finish, because this is who AD is. He simply has difficulty staying healthy through the course of an entire season, and you don't know how much you're going to have him. Now, the downside, ultimately, is that over the next 2 weeks, they play three of the most efficient top six teams in the league, and defense is where they miss AD the most. But if LeBron wants to plant his flag and say, I'm in this MVP race, then he has an opportunity to do that over the next couple of weeks. And I'm, in the big picture, not buying that this is a long-term issue with Anthony Davis, because he just appears to be one of those guys. Vince Carter was one, Chris Webber's another, who, when they have some sort of injury, it looks as if they've been shot. And then whether it's a quarter later or a couple games later, they're dunking on guys again. So everything that I know about this injury, with him in particular, says to me he's going to take some time off, much as he did with the shutdown last year, but that he will be there when they need him at the end, and that's going to be enough for them still to get the job done. And meanwhile, LeBron gets to bolster his MVP run.
Kyrie tells James Harden, officially, dude, you're the point guard, I'm not. Your takeaway is what?
Kyrie pointing out the obvious. Rather than the unusual, like the earth is flat, he's pointing out the obvious. The truth of the matter is, Kyrie Irving has never really been a point guard.
Right.
Wherever he played. I know that's the position that may be listed on the roster, but the reality is he is a shooting guard. He's not a setup guy per se. And so I appreciate the fact that he is recognizing reality and that he understands what his role is on this team. But it still is a matter of, when push comes to shove, is he happy being the shooting guard and the third option behind Harden and KD? And then the other aspect is, if you're a shooting guard, there's some pretty good guys that you're going to have to be matched up with defensively. And are you willing to put the effort in there? But overall, it's a positive sign, but it's kind of obvious. Yes, you're not the point guard, and you never really have been.
Couple minutes left. Chris Paul, to me, is he's the anti-Westbrook. There's no flash, and he elevates everybody, and he wins everywhere. But he doesn't get a lot of love. Maybe inside the league he does, but even then, a lot of pushback from Clipper fans, Blake Griffin. Now I look at Phoenix, they've won 9 of 10. Of course they have, because Chris Paul's there. Why doesn't he get love, and are you surprised by how good Phoenix is suddenly?
Well, one of the reasons that he doesn't get love is that he can be a difficult teammate. You have to do it Chris Paul's way, and much the same way you have to do it LeBron's way. The difference is LeBron has delivered the payoff of, if I do it his way, I'm going to wind up with a ring. Chris Paul has not been able to deliver on that. That said, his demeanor and his approach are exactly what the Phoenix Suns needed, because they had an established superstar / star in Devin Booker. And they didn't have anybody who was willing to say, I'll make the decisions, Devin. I'm not going to concede to you. Rubio was good as a floor general last year, and it improved them, but he doesn't have the same personality that Chris Paul has, in that we're going to do it this way, and I'm going to make the decisions. And that, I believe, is why he's had such a positive impact on the Suns, and why I don't know how many people are considering him for MVP, but right now, with a ballot of five, Chris Paul would be one of the five names on my MVP ballot.
That's interesting. All right, Bukes, good seeing you, buddy. Fox Sports.
And excellent seeing you, Colin.
Thanks. Appreciate that. Rick Bucher, I'll bring him on more regularly. That was a hint. I took that hint. By the way, of course LeBron can carry the Lakers from this point forward. That's not the issue. But this year, you don't get two things you got last year. Last year, we had the bubble. What did that mean? An older LeBron wasn't on a jet every night, so you could stay in your room and rest. We don't have that. So now LeBron doesn't get the advantage of the bubble. The second thing is that the pandemic shut down the league for several months. Again, massive rest for LeBron. We kept saying it last year in the bubble. God, LeBron's never played with this energy because he had two advantages. He wasn't on a plane. And he got 3 months off. So, yeah, at the end of last year, LeBron had this hyper energy that he hadn't had in years. We talked about it all the time. He was chasing guys down and blocking the ball. So now you got to put all these minutes in, and you're traveling every other night. You're flying across the country, and you're not getting a three-week respite right in the middle of the season. So I think it's a lot to ask of LeBron in his 18th year. Hour three next.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.